Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name and problem is Ziggy. Kind of weird speaking up here. Anyway, thanks for having me out. I appreciated Rich asking me at the 1 minute that he did ask me. Now I'm not so appreciative. But anyway, I think even as a kid, I felt a little bit different. I felt just a little bit off. You know, I never really felt comfortable in my skin. I grew up in a tiny little town in Maine that didn't even have a cop. It was so small. And, I probably would have grown up there, but my dad was in an accident, so we ended up moving to Florida. And I was seven, so I turned eight here in Florida. And, even at that time, I was doing really good in school, but I still felt a little bit, I was starting to have a little bit of problems with my anger, and I didn't really have any kind of solution for it. My dad and my brother would always fight, and my dad would drink, and my brothers would drink, so those are the kind of people I looked up to. So those were my examples in my life. And so I remember I was in fourth grade, and they tested my IQ because I just seemed so smart. And they said, okay, being that you scored so high on your IQ test, you're gonna skip a whole grade. I said, okay, that's great. So I was gonna skip. I was gonna do like half a year in fifth and half a year in sixth. But the problem was about that same time I started taking martial arts. So you take a kid who's angry and likes to fight and has no way to deal with it, I end up getting an altercation. So in fourth grade, I split this kid's head open. And I don't know, it seemed like a perfectly normal thing. I mean, because my brothers did it, but they said, we think, you're smart, but you really, I don't forget how they were, I was emotionally unstable. And I thought, you think I'm emotionally unstable now? And so I figured I'd spend at least a few years proving them wrong by all the bad things I did. And AA is, for our drinking, but that's our solution. But, I started smoking pot when I was nine, and because somebody told me it would help me with my anger. And obviously, it didn't. I mean, it just kind of slowed me down a little bit, really. So I continued to get in all kinds of more altercations at school, and every time, I seemed like I was like, okay, I won't. I'm gonna smarten up. So, that's the story of my life. So, in junior high, I started drinking. I know most people start drinking first, but my dad had a back injury, so he drank, and I didn't want to drink like my dad. I thought, well, I'm a smart guy. I'll figure out better things to do, right? I mean, that seems like perfect sense to me. So, I remember it was over at my friend Nick Roush's house, and we scrounged up all of our change. It was over the summer of between 7th and 8th grade, and it's like something nasty, like Natural Light or something disgusting, right? So anyway, I drank and I threw up, like a lot of people, I think. But I didn't stop drinking. I just said, okay, I'm start again. I just figured I drank too fast, and so that was kind of my story for a long time. I thought, If I drink the right amount, or if I mix this and mix that, I could be like those commercials. I could be like those people that drink normally and don't get in so much trouble. At this time, I was in eighth grade. I almost got arrested for fighting because I cracked some guy's jaw, and that was kind of like my whole routine. I would get mad and I had no way to deal with it, so I'd get in all kinds of altercations, and my drinking and my other activities were happening more and more. So I remember I went to high school, and by then I was getting messed up on the way to school because I knew there was going to be something there that was going to bother me, and I needed to just take the edge off it because somebody somewhere was going to piss me off that day, and I didn't really want to be fully mad. So, eventually my drinking just consumed my whole life. At 16, I dropped out, and I couldn't support my drinking and my other habits were not working. And I couldn't work with all my drinking. So I had to do something, so I started robbing. And that made perfect sense to me. By then I was already stealing. And then one of my friends said, if we just rob places, we won't have to sell this stuff. We just steal their money. So I was like, man, now that is smart. That is so smart. So that's what we did. I invested in my company. I went and bought a good shotgun and stuff, and I was an entrepreneur even then. So just like a lot of people, you know, apparently they don't like that when you put shotguns in people's faces. That's against the law. So, and somebody else had, like, had the same kind of armed robbery charges as what I ended up getting. And so they changed all the rules, like they were going to, it was going to be really bad. It wasn't just bad, you know. So at 16, I got sentenced to Florida State Prison, Department of Corrections. And I remember, I really didn't think that drinking was my problem. I really, like, to me, drinking and all the other stuff was the fabric that held my life together, that saved other people's lives around me. That's the way I looked at it. And I remember when I went to jail, I didn't have anything to calm me down, and I was a lunatic. I mean, it seemed like every time I would get out of confinement for fighting, somebody would piss me off, and I'd punch them. So that went on for pretty much for, you know, a while. I remember when I was in court, they said, they offered me like 22 years. And I says, man, you can stick that. If I go to trial, the worst I'm going to get is 25. That doesn't seem like a good deal. So, you know, we negotiated down to definitely a shorter sentence, 4.5 years with 3 mandatory, because in Florida with a firearm, you know, they do that. So when I went to prison, I drank just like everybody else in prison. You know, you'd think that it's like some hospital where there's nothing there, and it's just harder to get. That's really all it is. You know, you can't just go to the store and buy it. So I still, even at that time, I did not think that drinking was my problem. I really did not. And you know, for the first part of it, I just really was thinking, like, instead of robbing one place for a small amount of money, I need to rob one big place. Because then the odds are a lot better. Then I'm only doing one as opposed to like 10 or 20. So that was like my whole brainstorm. Because, you know, I was intelligent, so I figured I could figure something out. Because I knew there was no way I could work. It just got into my drinking time. There was no way that I could be drunk or messed up and go to work. It just doesn't work that way. I think normal people would say, well, how about just don't drink? And that was just crazy talk to me. I remember I thought all all the people around me in prison were pretty messed up, and I remember them telling me I was messed up, and I thought, man, I guess I am pretty messed up. If these people that are totally screwed up are telling me that I'm screwed up, something's wrong. I think Ray Charles could see that. I don't know. So, you know, I really didn't plan on making any changes in my life. I mean, I honestly did not. I didn't say, okay, when this happens, I'm going to smarten up. I was on a course. I mean, I knew that I was going to end up back in prison, or if I was even going to get out. So, you know, like a lot of people, you know, on my 18th birthday, I said, you know, well, before my 18th birthday, I said, you know, I'm going to get tore up from the floor up on my birthday. Because if there's anybody in this world that deserves to be out of their skin, it's me, you know. I'm celebrating my 18th birthday in prison. Nobody else deserves it more than me. So, just like any good alcoholic or any good other person, you know, you build up a little reserve, you know, for like that big party you're going to throw for yourself. I couldn't wait till my birthday, of course. So I did it all the day before, like an idiot. The guard who was smuggling everything in, like an idiot, this guy got caught. So we cut off the whole supply to everything that was coming to the compound. I didn't know that. I didn't know because it just happened to run out on my birthday, everything. Yeah. So I remember I said, okay, I'm gonna go get some liquor and stuff and alcohol. By about noon, I was completely livid because nobody had anything. I think I went to lunch, and I remember telling my roommate, I said, you know, the next person I see with anything, I'm just going to kill him and I'm going to take it. And he's like, okay, Olson. You know, because you go by your last name. I'm like, so I remember I left my, I remember I grabbed my pen because I didn't really want to get my hands all messed up. Because I was smart, you know, I had to think this whole thing through. So I left my prison cell and I happened to come across somebody that I knew. We were all right. I mean, you really don't have great friends in prison, but we were all right. And I didn't really want to kill this guy, but I thought, well, I don't really want to be sober today either. So I asked him, and he's like, what is your problem? I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean, what is my problem? Because you've already asked me 3 times a day. And, I didn't have an answer. I couldn't answer him. And, the big book talks about having that moment of clarity when you can see your life for what it really is. And you can, all the stupid stuff in your head just kind of stops. You can say, wait a minute, what the hell happened here? And, for me, that was that day. And that was August 12th, 1991. I didn't know what to say. I remember I went back to my cell, and I was kind of beside myself because I thought, man, I was willing to give up the rest of my life just for a little bit of peace and serenity for a little while, or what I termed as peace and serenity. And, even today, it's still, like, just baffling that I would come up with something. Even for me, that's stupid. I come up with some stupid stuff, but that's like beyond stupid. And I didn't know anything about AA. I remember as a kid, I used to jog by the AA in Zephyr Hills. I thought it was a party I never got invited to, and I used to get pissed off about it. I thought, what are these people? They're always there. I haven't got invited to one single party. You know what I mean? I used to get kicked out of place all the time, but I was never even kicked out of there. So I knew there was something going on. And story of my life, somebody with my same charges had gone to work release. I was trying to get to work release. Work release, you kind of, it's nicer than prison because you get to wear, like, grown-up clothes and you get to go out of the place during the day and maybe go home on the weekend. So it's kind of a goal for you when you're in prison. Because this guy did some stupid stuff when he was out, they changed all the people with my charges, said you can't go no more because you guys are retarded. And my caseworker there, she's like, he was like, if you go through this treatment, you can go, or it'll lower your points, because I was in what's called a close custody, which is maximum security. And he's like, it'll lower your classification, you won't be considered a psycho, just a bad guy, and you'll be able to go. And so I'm like, okay, cool, I already quit. I quit like a month ago, I'm good to go. And I remember because they interview you. I don't know why they have to interview to go into a treatment. I mean, you're there because you're screwed up. You're like, I guess they want to see, like, how screwed up you really are. Like, this really screwed up people and the kind of screwed up people. So I really didn't think anybody else struggled with drinking. Like, I thought, I thought people just didn't drink or they drank. I didn't realize that people just really just couldn't stop even if they ever wanted to. So I remember they interviewed me, and I learned that, and it blew my mind. And so I went to that place. That was like, I don't know, a few months place. So kind of to preface it, I ended up doing a little over 3 years, and the first year and a half I was tore up from the floor at most of the time as I could, and then I got sober. So halfway through my prison sentence, I ended up getting sober. But so I didn't choke anybody because I was really wanting to get to work with. So I wasn't fighting people. I wouldn't even go around people because I knew, like, if I was going to round people, I was going to punch them in the face. So I just thought I'd just go to stay away from people. I won't punch them in the face. And so finally I'm going to go to work release. I'm like, okay, great. Because I got like six months to a year left before I get out. And I'm like, okay, this is great. So on the way there, and before I go, they're like, well, yeah, you got to go to this treatment place. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm still sober from the other place. Why do I got to go to another one? But they're like, well, you can either not go or you can go to this treatment place. I'm like, well, you can send me to the treatment place. That sounds really good. And that was Reality House. It's in Daytona area. It's there's 100 people, and it's like 75 are court-ordered people, 75 are prisoners, and 25 are people the court sent there. And those people are crazy and sprayed roaches, man, I'll tell you. But anyway, so I went through that place, and I remember I wasn't even supposed to get out until, like, I figured August or September of that year. So, they have a printout sheet that tells you, like, when you're getting out. You have your number. Mine's 120388. Still remember it. And then your date, your release date. And mine didn't change for over 3 years. It stayed the same exact date because the first part of my sentence was mandatory. And I was supposed to graduate that Friday. My parents were going to come up and see me that weekend. And that sheet comes out on Tuesday. And I'm looking at the board, and I see my name, and it was like I was getting out that Friday. And it was just, It still just gives me chills because, you know, I was supposed to graduate that day. That was the day that and my parents were going to come see me, and I remember telling them, don't worry about coming to see me on Saturday. Come pick me up on Friday. Let's get the hell out of here. And, you know, that was May 14th, 1993 when I got out of prison. And I haven't had any felonies since I quit drinking. That's kind of one of the benefits. I mean, you normally don't, you know. I think that AA has, if it didn't give me anything else, it gave me that live TV pause where I can like, okay, no, don't do that. Because when I was drinking, I didn't have that pause in between my stupid ideas and my stupid reactions. Now I got like that, okay, no, that's stupid. So I got out of prison. I remember them telling me to find somebody who thinks like me and acts like me but's been sober longer. So I got out. It was like a Friday, and I went to a meeting that day. I went to like a noon meeting, and I think I went to a 6 o'clock too. Yeah. Or maybe I got on. Anyway, so I remember I met my sponsor. His name was Jack Hatch. He's dead now, but this guy, goofier than a football bat. And I thought, okay, this guy is perfect for me because he's sober and, you know, he lets me do whatever I want. And I believe that, you know, I think we all read the book the way it fits for our life, you know, if we read it. And, you know, Jack told me that I can do anything I want to do as long as I don't drink. He said, if I want to go do donuts in my neighbor's yard, go ahead. I don't care. He said, you know, you're going to suffer the consequences. He said, but if you're okay with it, go do it. I don't care. What I care about is you not drinking. And so that made it real easy for me. It was funny because, you know, I got out of prison at 19 and going to AA, and it was all older people, you know, and they're like, what are you doing here? Like, are you lost or something? And, you know, so it was kind of funny. I don't know. I've been going to AA ever since. You know, I got married and divorced in sobriety. I'm happily divorced now. That's a pretty good thing. I have a 14-year-old daughter who's never seen her dad drink, and you know that's incredible to me. I mean, that's my story. Not that if you did, you know, it's nothing bad, but that's my story. You know, my daughter doesn't learn that from me. She learns it from her mom, but she doesn't learn it from me. So, you know, I don't know. I know that everything good in my life is because of AA. Everything that I've done that's you know, I think about what I've accomplished in my life. It's only through sobriety, and you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's just, it's not something I would have ever thought that, you know, like that would have been the far, like if you asked me on August 11th, 1991, what I was going to do, it never, like if you asked me like 6,000 things, none of them would have been get sober tomorrow, not a single one. And, you know, it's just amazing. I'll tell you, the one way I know that I'm an alcoholic is I really never tried to control my drinking. I mean, I would just not drink sometimes because I knew I couldn't get loaded and go home. You know, I'd have a few or something like that. Or I'd go to a party and there was just a little bit of liquor. And I was like, it's not even enough. I'm going to be mad. I'm literally going to be mad and semi-drunk. Then I'm going to get in a fight. So we just won't do that. So there was this girl, story of my life. There was this girl that I was trying to take out. She was so hot. So trying to take her out. And she would always shoot me down. And finally, she says, okay, come pick me up at 6 o'clock. 16 years old, right before I went to prison. And so I remember at like 2 o'clock, I said, well, I'm going to have a drink just to take the edge off. Now, I don't know why I was going to take the edge off 4 hours before I was supposed to pick her up, but seemed perfectly logical to me. And I remember at 6 o'clock when we went to get her, I couldn't get out of the car. I was too loaded. I don't know how. I was like, damn it. That's not good. And, it didn't turn out good. But anyway, that's how I know. You know, they say that you become an alcoholic when alcohol starts causing problems in your life, whatever that is. Whether it's stealing a boat and going crashing into the Coast Guard, or whether it's kicking your dog 3 times instead of just 2. You know, whatever that means to you, you know, that's what I believe. It's easy for me, you know, I think it's easy for any alcoholic to look at their life honestly and see whether they are or not. That's not, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. I know that, you know, I used to say that there's no one book that has all the answers, and I found them all in the books of AA. And, you know, I thank each and every person that's been in my life, you know, that stayed sober and that got drunk because, you know, without them, I wouldn't be here. You know, you guys can have a meeting without me, but I can't have one without you guys. So with that, thanks for letting me share, and thanks for calling me out here.